Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. When political leaders enact economic policies such as the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 or the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, they promise economic growth, new jobs, and more money in the pockets of American families. But what's the actual impact of policy on the economy, and how do we track it? Today, we bring you a new segment on In the Moment. We're introducing it today, and it explores the way macroeconomics impacts your life. We're calling it Morning Macro with Joe Santos, and it's a chance to break down the numbers and break apart the rhetoric regarding fiscal policy and the economy and much more. Professor Joseph Santos is with the Department of Economics at South Dakota State University. Each week when you talk, you're invited to go online to read more on his blog. It's at schooled.blog.com, and we'll link you to that blog each time on our In the Moment show page at listen.sdpb.org. Joe Santos joins us now from the Janine Basinger Studio at SDSU in Brookings. Professor Santos, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So this is a crash course in economic literacy here at the blog Schooled, and I had such a good time sort of digging into it this weekend. And I would say for all our listeners, when I first started looking at this, I thought, oh boy. And then as I really started reading it, it was really a lot easier to get my mind around some of the big concepts than I thought it was going to be. So thank you for the way that you're able to sort of make that accessible to the rest of us poor thinkers in the world.
Oh, please. Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Well, let's talk about why this is important. Why is it sort of matter for people to understand something about, the economy and fiscal policy and macroeconomics in the first place? Why is it important for the rest of us?
Sure. That's a great question. So, let me just start by defining macroeconomics. This is a branch of economic studies that looks at the economy as a whole. So we're looking at what I like to think of as the general features of the economy. Think of things like the unemployment rate. So, there you're not being very specific about who's unemployed. You're simply referring to what percentage of the labor force is currently out of work and seeking it. Or as you mentioned in your intro, you talked about incomes of consumers. You're not referring to specific consumers with specific types of jobs and so forth, but just, again, the general features of the economy and, in that case, income. So macroeconomics is very broad-based. As I like to say, we're observing economic activity from 50,000 feet. And so almost by definition, these forces are affecting everyone because everyone, again, by definition, is a member of the macroeconomy. So when we see unemployment rates rising, again, it's sort of agnostic. It's just an unemployment rate. And it doesn't matter what you're doing. It seems to be the case in that situation that you're having a tougher time staying attached to your job, as economists like to say. Or if we say that incomes are falling, again, this is a macroeconomic force. And so the fact that you're in IT or in agriculture or what have you is not likely to insulate you from this enormous force. So macroeconomics can seem very abstract, again, because it's this view from 50,000 feet. But as I like to say, by definition, everyone is included in that economy that we're looking down at. So it's a very important field of economics. You also mentioned policy. That's sort of new to macroeconomic theory. New, I mean, middle of the 20th century new. But this idea that perhaps government can do something to actually fuel good macroeconomic forces or perhaps counteract bad macroeconomic forces, that idea and fiscal policy as part of that toolkit is a relatively new idea. It dates back to about the Second World War. Economics is a lot older than that. So again, we can talk a bit more about that if you wish as well.
So when we're on that ground level and you hear people just in conversation saying things like, well, I'm doing pretty well right now. Everything must be going well. Or on the flip side, I just can't seem to get ahead. There could be larger forces at play that, we aren't necessarily tuned into.
That's right. There could be larger forces at play. They're almost so large that they're invisible to an individual and an individual job and circumstances of the sort you describe. Also, and again, your lead-in referred to this, but that individual circumstances could be in some way a manifestation of economic policy. where interest rates are, where taxes are, and so forth, could be shaping that individual's circumstances in ways that, well, frankly, they'd be forgiven for not recognizing.
Right. All right, so let's... It becomes something that we vote on, too, because political leaders are telling us with a fair amount of regularity that their fiscal policy is going to help us do better. It's, you know, this is the push behind tax reform. This is the push mm-hmm. behind if people are upset and something needs to be done and they look to the federal government. So how much do we know, or how much do those economists, folks who are giving advice at the top really know about how some of those policies are going to affect the economy? Is it a clear-cut consensus on what's good for the economy and what's not?
This is a fantastically devilish question that macroeconomists attempt to answer as best they can. But this is tough. So just for a moment, a little bit of detail. Part of the problem is in the scientific method that we necessarily use. We only have natural experiments. Economists don't have beakers and Bunsen burners and so on. We only have natural experiments. So the idea is you wait to see some sort of tax policy implemented, right? And then you watch and you look at these general features of the economy, like the unemployment rate, like income levels and productivity, and see if you can detect the effects of the policy. And that sounds very easy to do. It's devilishly difficult to do because identifying the policy is actually tougher than you might think. So the government may lower taxes, 40 gazillion other things may happen at the same time. And now you're left as the macroeconomist trying to separate out what portion of the effects on employment or income or whatever can we attach to the tax policy. So you're dealing with natural experiments. It's very hard to essentially hold everything else constant. So with that said, there's a lot of debate about the consequences of government policies, and in particular fiscal policy. I should say, when we're talking about fiscal policy, this goes back to a rather archaic term, the fisc, or the purse of the government. Mm. And so this is all about taxing and spending. And technically, it's taxing and spending in order to bring about changes in the macroeconomy. So strictly speaking, you wouldn't refer to everything the government does. Raising the entry fee on a national park, for example, would not be fiscal policy. Fiscal policy pertains only to those policies that seek to change this macro economy in one way or the other. So there's a lot of debate about how effective it is. As I always tell my students, we're fairly certain about the extremes. If you suddenly accelerate tax rates, increase them dramatically, we're fairly confident that that would slow the economy down. If you do the opposite, we're fairly confident that that would have it would boost the economy, at least in the short run. But of course, we don't implement policy in the extremes. We work in that middle where the policies are not that drastic, and so it's much more difficult to measure the effects. But in general, the directions of the forces are higher taxes would tend to slow economic activity, higher spending would tend to stimulate economic activity.
So as you say, this is a relatively new field. Are we getting better at making those predictions in a world where we have the assistance of, you know, data collection and algorithms and, you know, we're building on the knowledge that we already have? Are we getting better at understanding the impacts of fiscal policy?
I think we are. I think there are certain things we're fairly certain of. As I said, if we were to raise taxes, at least in the short run, I think there's a general consensus that that removes discretionary income from households in the very simple ways you'd imagine. The government takes it, and so the household can't spend it. And that could have a sort of slowing effect on the economy. We're fairly certain that an increase in government spending to fix highways or whatever, again, just by arithmetic, it increases the incomes of those individuals who are employed in those activities. And at least in the short run, there is likely a stimulative effect. The question here is how long this effect lasts. And there's really no question that there are consequences with respect to the fiscal balance. So you mentioned debts and deficits earlier, and we can get to this if you wish. But there's no question that if the government increases spending or if the government reduces taxes, it is going to compromise the budget of the government. It's going to affect how much the government takes in. It's going to affect how much the government pays out. So all else equal, there's little debate about that. The government's budget will reflect the effect of fiscal policy, whether the policy is effective or not.
And that brings us back to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 and the fact that the Congressional Budget Office was talking about what it would do to the deficit, what it would do to the national debt. That's pretty easy to measure. There's a little math involved. And again, you can go to Professor Santos's blog, schooled.blog.com, and read and see some graphs and some formulas on there to help you figure all that out. But from the big picture standpoint, we know clearly that the deficit and the debt is going to increase. Let's talk about when someone says that's going to happen, is the sky falling? Is that, you know, how do we address that kind of conversation in an intelligent way? What are we looking for?
That's a really good question. So the debt is, it's an accumulation. It's something you can talk about at a moment in time. You can ask, what is the government's debt today? And the answer would be how much the government is sort of on the hook for, if you will, in the red at this moment. So at any moment in time, we know what the debt is. And at this moment in time, depending on how you measure it, you'd get a number somewhere around $15 trillion. So one very concrete way to think about that is all of the Treasury IOUs, bills, notes, bonds, all of these IOUs outstanding add up to about $15 trillion. So is that big? Well, it depends on the size of the economy. When macroeconomists try to quantify the debt, we sort of do two things. One, we do what I just said. You find all of the IOUs, you add them up and say, okay, what do they owe it right now? That's $15 trillion. And then we scale it. We say, well, the size of the economy matters, so let's divide that by the size of the economy, and that would be something we call gross domestic product. When you do that, you get something like 75% of GDP, if you count all the bills and notes and bonds that someone other than the government is holding at this point. Long story short, government agencies can hold government debt, and so we tend to net that out. You get a number like 75%, and that's, depending on your perspective, it's either terrifying or not. You know, Japan, Greece, Portugal, Italy, all of these countries have a measure that would be in excess of 100% of the size of their economy. So I guess by that standard, we're doing quite well. But the way
we're not trying to be Greece, though.
That's right. That's right. You don't want to, that's not the high watermark.
Right.
But it's a great question you asked about, you know, let's just say it's 0.75. Is 75% bad? So macroeconomists tend to think of this from the perspective of, is it sustainable? So is 0.75, 75% of GDP likely to skyrocket? Is it likely to fall? Is it likely to stay the same? And so that really depends, if you think about everything we've just been saying, it depends on how much debt you're accumulating over time. So that's where the deficit comes in. That's over an interval of a year. That's how much more red you've gotten yourself into. So that matters. But then since we're scaling it by gross domestic product, it also depends on how fast the economy is growing. Because, you know, you can sort of grow yourself out of a debt problem. IOUs don't look so scary if you have a very high gross domestic product. So is the U.S. debt ratio sustainable? No, because basic arithmetic will tell us that right now the economy is not growing fast enough to sort of shrink our way out of our debt to GDP. And we have a deficit. And as you said, the CBO estimates that deficit will only get bigger. So long story short, the U.S. government is going into the red every additional year it exists, adding to the amount that it's already in the red. And then on top of that, the U.S. economy is growing. It's in its 10th year of expansion. It's doing wonderfully. But the growth it would need would
would need to be much greater. Go ahead.
And this is where we're going to have to stop for today. Believe it or not, that went so fast. And this is why we're going to have these conversations on Monday and why there is supplemental information online. Professor Joe Santos, I really look forward to this. I look forward to talking to you again this week, next week, and picking up where we left off. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.